Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Well, welcome to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Hey, this is the show where we talk about sexual addiction and really kind of bring to light the dynamics behind that. And there isn't another show that I'm aware of that specifically talks about the disorder of sexual addiction. And it's just been a fascinating month because I have had experts on from all over the country that have written books or who do specific kinds of therapy. You know, it's a real learning experience for me. I'm a psychotherapist of 32 years, and I am a certified sexual addictions therapist of two. And so I consider myself an infant / pioneer in the field of sexual addiction. And if you are suffering from the disorder, or if you know somebody who is, then you're probably a pioneer too. And the reason I say that is
Carol.
Oh, goodness. There we go. You know, I got to quit putting that cursor over things. I was just sitting here reading about our guest tonight. He has so much experience in addictions, and he, too, is a certified sexual addictions therapist, and he really enjoys looking at relationships and how they contribute to or contaminate each other based on the dynamics of the couple. So we're going to be talking with Ben Galloway, who runs Enchantment Workshops out of Phoenix, Arizona. And Ben is going to be talking about some things that you probably have heard of before in terms of relationships. He's going to be talking about what is love addiction and love avoidance. And, you know, there's no doubt that we've studied this in addiction because what we know to be true is that when somebody is addicted, whether it's to chemicals, whether it's to substances, whether it's to sex, more than likely, they play out their addictive qualities either sexually by having compulsive, obsessive sex, pursuing sex, pursuing love, pursuing relationships to find that euphoric recall they had prior to, or to meet that need for an adrenaline rush, or they're sexually anorexic. You know, they avoid sex. They avoid relationships. And you can imagine that oftentimes a couple actually portrays both of these issues. You know, you may have the wife who's love avoidant and the husband who's love pursuant. Or you may have the wife who has an addiction to love or sex and the man is actually avoidant. So Ben is going to clear up for us some of the theory behind these types of relationships and why there are these extremes. And so, you know, he jokingly says, hey, some of us can be from Pluto, but we have to play, you know, blaze a trail there. And I happen to train with John Gray, and I really do believe there are some inherent gender differences in many of us. I would never stereotype all of us, but I do think there are clearly some inherent differences, and figuring out how they play out based on childhood of origin issues, you know, role modeling they may have seen, or trauma that they may have experienced. Boy, that's what clearly creates these relationship patterns. Now, I want you to get a pen and paper because the call-in number for tonight is 646-595-3284. What does that mean? That means that you can call in at any point and ask Ben or myself a question, or you can share some of your own issues. This is absolutely an honest dialogue format. You get to call in, and if you have concerns about yourself, whether it's on topic or off topic, it's okay. So again, that number is 646-595-3284. And can't emphasize enough that this is absolutely a safe place. Nobody's going to know your voice. I mean, that is the beauty of internet radio. With internet radio, we are not just local, but our airwaves are not just in the United States, but they're in, I think it's 17 different countries through Blog Talk Radio. So nobody's going to know who you are. Feel free to get your questions answered or share your comments. You know, we've had some controversial guests in the past, so feel free to call up and say, hey, that goes against the 12-step program, or what the hell is the 12-step program anyway? You know, there's no doubt that being a certified sexual addictions therapist, we learned through ITAP, which is an organization that was founded by Patrick Carnes, we learned that it's not just good therapy, but it's also group therapy, a 12-step model, and bibliotherapy that really works. And you know, this is hard work. When you decide that you're going to recover from sexual addiction, that means that you have to designate some morning time for meditation, some after work or during work time to head to meetings, 12-step meetings. You have to get a sponsor. You know, you have to do some reading. I mean, you don't have to. Listen to me saying you have to. But all these tools make it much more likely that you are going to manage your recovery and avoid slips and relapses. And so, again, can't emphasize enough, if you hang in there and listen to the show, you will find out as much as you need to know about sexual addiction. And we can always get you to the right place. I mean, you know, I had a client this week who appeared to be doing really, really well, almost to the point where I was going to use him on the show. And then it came out that he wasn't doing well. He was cheating up a storm. He was in internet chat rooms. He was making really suggestive sexual phone calls. And he was absolutely a mess. And he was going to meetings and was just beginning to sponsor people. Now, that is the risk anybody faces in a 12-step program, that there might be somebody who's lying to themselves and therefore lying to others. But I got to tell you, the majority of people that we work with are using rigorous honesty, and they are walking their talk, and they're making a difference in the lives of so many other people. So can't emphasize enough how important it is to take your life to that next level and, you know, get a certified sexual addiction therapist. Now, you may say, well, how do I find one? If you go to the website, www.sexhelp.com. You can plug in your zip code, your state, and it will show you certified sexual addictions therapists. Or, you know, some of us, I mean, I do it by Skype. There are plenty of areas that don't have certified sexual addiction therapists. And so I will work with you with Skype, and, you know, where we actually are seeing each other and we're doing the work. And I happen to use a recovery task model that Patrick Carnes developed. And so I have you do your homework, you buy the kit, you do your homework, we dialogue about it, and then we do a check-in. And you probably know the check-ins are when you check in about your feelings, how your week was, and what you're working on. So never fear, if there isn't a certified sexual addictions therapist right there with you, that's okay. Because I'm here to tell you that there are plenty of ways that you can get the help you need with today's technology. Now, what do you do if you have sworn off the internet? Well, I suspect you're listening to the show right now, so you must have some availability. Maybe you've got your spouse helping you and monitoring you, or maybe you've got some sort of device on your computer that reassures your sponsor or your loved one that you are staying clean and you are staying off the websites. Covenant Eyes, Secret Eyes, many things available to you. So how was your week anyway? I got to tell you, this has been a whirlwind of a week for me. I'm actually resigning from a job of 16 years. I'm 56. If you ever want to get on my website, it's www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. Similar to the name of the show, Hope, Strength, and Recovery. In doing this, I feel very conflicted. I have loved working for the corporation that I've worked for, and I've made many good friends. I've really established a strong client base, and I have been able to run groups. I've run over 2,000 groups, women's groups, anxiety groups, self-esteem groups, CBT groups, you name it, I've probably done it, and I've done a lot of presentations. If you get on my website, just my Carol the Coach website, you'll see that I do television. I've had radio shows. It's just really afforded me an opportunity to expand. As a matter of fact, if you're listening to me locally, you can tune me on tomorrow night. Tune me in on Channel 6, which is WHTR. I'm going to be talking about girl self-esteem and, you know, how they're using the internet to validate who they are, and most of them are not getting solid validation. But anyway, so I've had this really bittersweet week and had my resignation party with my staff, loved it, had a blast, and then two nights later came home to a surprise party for me. Actually was talking to Ben Galloway, who is going to be on the show here in just a few, and was talking with him and walked in on my surprise party. Flowers everywhere, people everywhere, and with a fine dining meal after the party. So, you know, it kind of made me feel better. I'm a person that believes you got to process your feelings, but then you got to move on. And if you've got a specific feeling that you want to share tonight, 646-595-3284. That is the number that you can call in at any point to share your feelings, to share your opinions, to ask your questions, and to get the help that you deserve. So I'm a big believer in good mental health, and I do believe that, you know, you got to start out your day strong. So when I get up, I'm always reading something inspirational. Now, for a sex addict, that might be the SAA or the SA book, very similar to Alcoholics Anonymous book. It's kind of the Bible. It goes into not only people's stories, but also the 12 steps, which can be very, very helpful in figuring out how to reformulate your character. You know, what do you need to do to let go of the shame and guilt, to look at your defects, to build up your self-esteem, and to then to work with others and help them do the same. And then, you know, some people read a good Patrick Carnes book, Facing the Shadows, Out of the Shadows. Some people read, you know, What It's Like to Be the Partner. Stephanie Carnes has written some great books. Robert Weiss has written a wonderful book. And, you know, we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago, John and Elaine Leadham, who wrote a couple's recovery guide called One in the Spirit. So that's how I start my day out, followed by exercise. One, I find that it decreases my anxiety. And two, what I also find to be true is that, you know, not only does my anxiety decrease, but I feel more disciplined, like I have really something to offer. You know, when I'm doing something healthy for myself, it produces endorphins. There's no doubt about it. So how do you start your day? You know, are you snoozing that alarm clock over and over and over again, kind of dreading the day? Or are you bouncing out of bed and looking forward to what the day has to bring you? Interestingly enough, I have to tell you that they did a study on how to be happy. And they did 20,000 people, and they found out that there were really three components to being happy. The first one being staying in the moment. The second one being having gratitude. And the third one being that you used reframing. And when you use reframing, you take any obstacle or challenge and you ask yourself, hey, what do I have to learn from this? What does it have to teach me? So, interestingly enough, there is no doubt that, you know, you can create formulas that really help you and that really create a scenario and a situation whereby, you know, you will feel better about yourself. Now, I'm wondering what you do to get off to the right start. You know, maybe it's that you sit with the kids and you read them a book, or perhaps you go outside and just take a long, healthy walk, or maybe you pray. Journal. Listen to your favorite music. Yeah, it really matters not what you do, but it does matter that you feel good about it. That's what really counts. So, as I've indicated, there are so many opportunities to make yourself feel good. And sexual addiction takes those opportunities away. There is no way you can lead a life of with sexual addiction and feel good about yourself. And so that's one of the reasons that it is so important to, you know, find those magic formulas that work. And I'm a real big believer in having people that you can talk to and share how you're feeling. And so when you do that, then really you've got that support network. That's why the 12-step program works so very well for everybody. All right. Well, hey, this is Carol the coach, and do I have Ben on the line?
Yes, Carol, it's me.
Hello, Ben. I've been waiting for you because I am very excited today to be talking to you about some of your theories and what you've seen in couples over the course of years when they had addictions and they were really trying to create a sense of intimacy. So tell me a little bit about yourself. If you would, tell our audience what it is you do and how you do that.
Well, I live out here in Arizona, and I have been in the field of addiction recovery as a therapist for almost 23 years. The first 7 years, I worked in a rehab center, and then I've been in private practice for a little over 15 years. And about 5-6 years ago, we built a place in northern Arizona where we do intensives and workshops. So I have some ongoing men's groups and a private practice in Phoenix, and then I have the workshops facility in northern Arizona. And I'd say about 16 years ago, I met Patrick Carnes and started doing some intensive training with him, and Pia Melody, and did her PIT trainings, and just kind of hung out with some of that cutting edge stuff as it was.
Well, yeah, because she's the best in the field when it comes to love addiction and love avoidance. And what does PIT stand for?
Well, PIT is post-induction therapy. And what it really means is post, of course, is after. Induction is what is induced into a child. And then therapy is just the modality. And it's a pretty simple, basic modality that wraps around 12-step recovery real well. It wraps around a lot of different therapy modalities. So it's very useful, and it is it's very applicable with most people. I find it doesn't work well with everyone, but for most mm-hmm. people, I can get around in that model very well.
Okay, so you worked with the cutting edge. You worked with people that are founders in the field of relationships and addiction and sexual addiction, and that had to really inspire you for greatness.
It did. I had my own work to do, of course, a wounded healer, very much so. And before I ever met Patrick and Pia, I did a lot of John Bradshaw's work, and I had my own work to do. I found a therapist I could really feel safe with, and a men's group that I could land in and really get some of my own trauma work done. And my wife and I, we've been together about 21 years and have quite a few failed relationships between us before we met each other. We're both mm-hmm. in recovery. And so we both had our individual work to do, and then we had our work to do together. And my first question to her was, when it gets going a little bit rough for us, will you do the work? And I asked her not to answer the question right away. She got back mm-hmm. to me and said, "Yep, I'm all in." So we kind of grew the love through some hard work. And we had three children, hers, mine, and then eventually ours. And our daughter is 20. So she grew
wow.
up in recovery.
Well, and so, you know, obviously it's exciting to get to work together in recovery, but it's very challenging because you both probably fed into each other's wounds.
Well, early on it was very challenging, and that's one of the things I hope we get to, is there is a lot of hope, because when you really do the work within those models, whether it's Patrick Carnes' model on sex addiction and co-sex addiction and getting the relationship healed up over a good amount of time, or whether it's Pia's model on love addiction and love avoidance and healing trauma. You know, it's worth it. It's not much of a struggle for us most of the time when we stand in self-care today. And, of course, there are times where life makes that difficult, and we get busy and things happen in life, and death happens, and all kinds of stuff gets dealt out. But we've got a tool basket.
Mm-hmm. So let's get started. I mean, how do you believe that these very different ways of being in a relationship, how do you believe they get formed to begin with?
Well, I think the way I wrap my head around it is there are two basic forms of abandonment in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And really, abuse, and this is Pia Melody's definition, but she says abuse to a child is any act less than nurturing. And so abandonment, whether you have a connection with a parent and they die, or there's a divorce and you lose that connection, or you have a parent who's home but not really home, and you just can't quite plug into them. That sets up love addiction, or an orient. If a full blown love addict is something different than someone who's oriented to closeness and relationship. Most women are built that way a little bit more than some of the differences with men are that most men are, more distance-oriented. However, when it's in an extreme, you have enmeshing abuse is also abandonment, but it's where the child starts to grow up with their focus on what the parents want of them. And they
that makes
really
total sense, that abandonment versus neglect, and then also, obviously, the expectations of what is expected of you as a kid. Ben, we've actually got somebody on the line. Your name is? Are you there? Okay, we had somebody there. Are you
there?
We had
someone.
Okay. Yes,
we'll get
we
them
did.
Back.
Okay, so continue. Now,
okay.
Do you think
enmeshment, the enmeshing abuse drains the child, and they basically are oriented to distance because of the draining. And so they usually will find a partner who's needy and a love addict, and that overwhelms them, and they become very distance-oriented. So you have a distance-oriented individual and a kind of a relationship value rests on the other person, oriented person. So they're both rooted in abandonment, but different forms.
Well, that makes sense. Okay, so then how are they drawn to each other and also drawn to the different roles?
Well, I think what happens as far as being drawn to the different roles,
mm-hmm.
That we have different neuroscience has come a long ways in the last 10 years, and we have different orientations that are set up in childhood. So we carry those wounded parts forward into the adulthood. And so the past isn't really the past. It's alive and well in our neurochemistry. So what happens in that when we're, for instance, looking for a partner, we have that map and that orientation and that energy. So a lot of times we will, the energy ends up being the picker. And we connect with people who fit with our issues in such a way that it brings out what's unfinished in us. And
okay, so they say that again. The energy becomes the picker.
Yes.
So,
and
so
we
give us
end
an
up
example.
We'll end up with someone who just rubs us the wrong way in such a way that it brings out what's unfinished in us. So a lot of times I'll be working with a couple, and you will see someone who had, say a female, had a dad who was unavailable, and she'll pick end up with a man who's very walled off, emotionally distant, unavailable. And then he grew up with a mom who was angry, and she gets mad about the abandonment, and then what happens, they trigger off of each other. So what that really does, it gives them a vehicle to be able to start to heal what's unfinished. The relationship does. Now, it starts with each person doing their own work, of course.
Of course.
Yes. So, Terrence Real, he's on the East Coast, out where you're at, and he wrote a book, and his premise is, and also Harville Hendricks, he has a model called Imago that's real popular, that we pick our unfinished business, and
mm-hmm.
the other person brings out what's unfinished in us. And in those models, it's about you waking up to what's unfinished and being presented in front of us, and not acting it out in the relationship, but building boundaries and a program where you work with that unfinished business. Now, in Pia's model, she focuses a lot more on boundaries, and so.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of got to figure out what works best for which couple. And, there's quite an assessment process while you're working with people and trying to figure out where they're at in recovery, what model's going to work best, and getting in and out of those models.
Well, that makes total sense. Now, you hear so often about codependency in relationships. And typically in addiction, there is somebody who tends to be codependent. Can you clarify what you believe codependency is in the model of with relationships and addiction?
There's been a lot of confusion about that term, because initially it was co to the chemically dependent. And in the later 80s, I think Bradshaw and Pia Melody, she wrote Facing Codependency. But what they started to utilize the term, and it was more based in an adapted self or a false self that has a problem showing up in relationship with self first and then in relationship with others. And so that term of codependency is really a problem with our sense of self related to, you know, self-esteem issues, boundary issues, owning our reality and being accountable for it with humility and taking care of our needs and wants and remaining a little more moderate. We live in these extremes. And so you can have a love addict or a love avoidant. It's when you have those ways of being in a relationship, codependency is always behind it. You can have a codependent individual who is not severely love addicted or severely love avoidant, but they'll be oriented to those extremes, those ways of being relational. So, it's a confusing word. It's kind of a catchphrase, and it really speaks to trauma, sets up problems with this sense of self, and then that creates unmanageability in the first step of a 12-step program. We talk about unmanageability, and then that creates problems with being relational, which creates problems with control, spirituality, and a sense of being who we truly are. And it sets up problems with being able to own our needs and wants. And so codependency really, the other way it's used a lot is in the Al-Anon sense. You'll have people in Alcoholics Anonymous and a partner will be in Al-Anon. And some people utilize it that way, where you have a codependent is the partner of an addict. But again, it can be a confusing word.
Yeah, and I certainly believe that when you've grown up with abandonment or you've grown up with neglect, there's going to be self-esteem issues anyway. And so for those people that have that void, of course they're going to hook up, they're going to be magnetized to somebody who has addictions so that they can take care of them and feel that sense of self. But, of course, if they don't have that true sense of their own self, they're not going to be healthy enough to know what the boundaries are. And you said Pia is a master at talking about boundaries when it comes to codependency. And I understand why. You've got to have those boundaries, but you can't really even have those boundaries until you have that sense of self-esteem.
Well, and Carol, another interesting model that a couple of people have done work in is, Terence Gorski did a lot of work in the substance abuse area and designed the Synapse model and did relapse prevention work. And him and Claudia Black, Claudia, just a neat lady, she did a lot of work around after the Vietnam War. In 1978, there was a fellowship form called Adult Children of Alcoholics. And her and quite a few other people pioneered this whole childhood onset PTSD. Well, Claudia and Terence did a model on codependency and counterdependency. So, and then there's a couple in Colorado Springs, the Weinholds, wrote a book on codependency and counterdependency. And the counterdependency is like love avoidance, and then codependency is more like love addiction.
Uh-huh.
And what you're talking about with a caretaker role, we collect caseloads of needy people, broken people, wounded people. But what's interesting about that, you would think it's more of a love-addicted role, but what that really is, you cannot love a person who's trying to take care of you. In other words, you can't create equality and true intimacy because they're coming from a parent role and a one-up role. And, you know, they think, you know, they're trying to, most of them, if you ask them why they're locked into that, well, I'm trying to help. And, you know, it's love. But what it really is in that childhood, their needs were denied and they were taught to externalize. So they end up needing to be needed, and they're coming from a parent role. So they know what's best for you. Well, that doesn't create intimacy.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
A lot of resentment and a lot of old childhood wounds come out that way. So you can see where that would just really keep that avoidance cycle going.
It really does.
So what do you think is a healthy balance between these extremes? You know, what is it you think they look like? And what, in your opinion, is healthy intimacy?
Well, people flip-flop in and out of being more distance-oriented. And we were just talking about this the other day. Women tend to, when they get up in their 50s and have been married a while, they get much more independent, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And men become more needy and settled into the nest. So a lot of times when people have done a lot of their own work, they'll flip-flop in those extremes. But the idea is to get enough work done to where you're not locked in there. And what health really looks like as you start doing your work around the trauma and you build intimacy, a lot of the couples that my wife and I both see, they do a couples meeting at least once a week, and they go through all the basic emotions, and they use boundaries, so they're not talking over one another. There's two parts to communication. There's talking and there's listening. And so it's that kind of equality also in a relationship where you don't have a parent and a child in a relationship. They're negotiating needs and wants and accepting where the other person comes from. No two people want to be loved exactly the same, and if they do, it creates quite an enmeshed situation that usually creates problems later. So they grow the love through needs negotiation. I would say an intimate relationship is intentional, and it's intentional because two people have come together and said, here's what we stand for, here are the principles we live by, and we negotiate and we fight fair. Main thing is fighting fair. A lot of couples will get over on a scale of 0 to 10, they get over a 4, and then they get in and just really get in those agendas about wanting to be right, make the other person wrong, revenge, punishing the other one with silence, all those things. We really teach people that if you're over a 4, you got to separate and do your own work and then come back together and fight fair about whatever it is you're fighting about. And if you can't, get some third-party help. So I'd say it's much more intentional. Healthy sexuality and the needs and wants get negotiated. Healthy spirituality.
Well, and then you said that a lot of the couples that you work with, they at least attend once a week a couples meeting. And then what else do they do?
Well, the couples meeting is something they do on their own, and
mm-hmm.
we have a format for them to do that. They have a date night at least once a week, and that's the hardest thing to get couples to do. And that's kind of sad that we can't find one night a week where we go honor our relationship. Now, most of our couples...
Yeah, I don't get that, Ben. I don't get that at all, because
right.
we go out at least twice a week. We need that for stimulation. Now, we don't have kids. So
yeah.
that makes it a whole lot easier. But I imagine you're working with a lot of middle-aged people who their children are grown too. So you're saying that a lot of the couples you work with, boy, what does it feel, selfish or self-indulgent to go out on a date at least once a week?
No, it's the love avoidant you're usually wrestling with on that one, because they create intensity outside the relationship. I mean, they'll have an enmeshed mother, they'll have in-laws or be saving their whole family, they'll be into work addiction and working 60, 70 hours a week, they'll be into an emotional affair or even sexual affair. So, you know, we really don't do the couples work until they get into, well into their own individual recovery. We do a lot of boundaries work. But what a lot of them do, we won't work with them unless they're at least willing to do a date night and a couples meeting once a week.
Okay.
And then, you know, at a bare minimum. And needs and wants negotiation, we, in our model, we develop in six ways: intellectual, sexual, emotional, spiritual, physical, and social. And so we go through a long process of really negotiating those needs and wants, and they grow a sense of being together based in where each of them is coming from. And, you know, you have a right to ask for what you need and want. The other person always has a right to say yes or no and and or negotiate. So some of these, you know, people, a lot like me and my wife, we did not have skills. I mean, our parents did not have relationships. It was a war zone. So you or I now, it seems really ludicrous that someone wouldn't go on a date night. It's appalling because, you know, what really matters here is loving another human being and honoring the relationship. But a lot of people, even people in AA and NA and some of the fellowships, are really still walled off and having difficulty in these relationships. I think in the programs we're taught, you know, you work your program, I'll work mine. And some people grow the relationship. The third leg on the stool is the relationship recovery. But, you know, it's tough. You got to meet people where they're at, and everybody's at a different place when they come into our office.
Well, and I was going to ask, so they come to you because they understand that you have special expertise in addiction and sexual addiction, and so you meet with them, you assess them, and then you go into your expectations for them as a couple.
Well,
and if I understand, well, go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, and so if I understand it right, you know, you are recommending a couples meeting at least once a week, therapy with you, a date night at least once a week. You look into the needs and wants and negotiation and figure out what that is. And if they have difficulty with fighting, and it gets to be, you said, a level four, you ask them to go back and keep really working individually first.
Well, no, you know, what happens when they fight, we have a handout called the defusing handout. And what happens when you activate your sympathetic nervous system, you flood with cortisol, epinephrine, and norepinephrine. So whether they're brand new or they've been together 20, 30 years and really done a lot of work, we use that as a model that if you get over a 4 on a scale of 0 to 10, you take a break for 30 minutes, come out of the chemical detox and the emotional flooding, and get back into the parent, the functional adult, and then reapproach each other. If you can't resolve it then bring it to therapy. Now, because if we get a couple, say, I work a lot with substance abuse and sex addiction, so if we get someone who's been using chemicals and there's been sexual betrayal, there's a long process of getting them ready to get healthy and get ego strength and get into the program, 12-step recovery, do a disclosure, really manage the really PTSD in the spouse and the shame in the addict, and really get some accountability work done. And so we don't focus at that point a lot on the couple's work. Focus more on boundaries work, and we will introduce later the couples meeting format, where you build intimacy in and start to build the focus on the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, in Pia's model and Patrick's model, Pat Carnes' model, it's a little bit later. So after they've done some of their individual work and really have a strong foundation, they've been in the program, have sponsors, they've worked some steps, gotten a 4-step done, and they're really on their feet. And then you start to move into the more intense couples work. Now, if we get a couple who's already done all the initial stuff and they've got, say, 7 or 8 years in the program, most of them will say we're having communication problems. And, you know, what you find out is there's this whole web of sexual issues, financial issues, issues with kids or parenting, and a lot of it is the subtle trauma that the fourth and fifth step didn't get cleaned out, and stuff they just aren't aware of. Because the subtle stuff that happens in families gets normalized. So they aren't even seeing what's really going on. And some of them that have done a lot of step work and a lot of service work in the program, but they're just stuck. And so in Pat and Pia's model both, there's a five-year continuum. And so you do, the needs change as people move through some different work at different times. So that's a little bit, it's a little complex figuring out where people are at. You'll get therapists who are real stuck in a rigid way of approaching people, and it becomes problematic because not everybody is at the same place. You can't treat everybody identical. Mm-hmm. You know, people are at different places based on how long they've been doing this, recovery dance, and how severe the addictions are and how big the trauma is. And how they love one another. I mean, some people have some pretty good skills, and some don't have any, hardly.
Well, I can imagine. So now, do you think people blame their past too much for the relationship difficulties they have?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do. I think some people, what happens when we have trauma, whether it's subtle or it's big,
now, when you say subtle or big, you mean like abuse would be
big. Yeah, big would mean, what I mean by big is I know I need therapy because I was sexually abused, I was physically abused, I had a severe traumatic experience, or I had a parent die, or, you know, you'll even see people who had a parent die or leave, and they will normalize that as it was no big deal.
Right,
subtle,
right.
The subtle stuff, what happens, children incorporate shame, so that's a self-esteem issue. And they'll carry the shame, and they'll tell themselves that they're less than, not enough, not good enough. Now, they may present better than, one up, walled off, or they may present less than, one down, not enough. But what happens when you have that shame, you're either going to probably blame other people or yourself for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so important. People say, well, you're blaming your childhood, but you've got to go back and assign responsibility. You'll find people who are, if they make even a small mistake with their children, they blame themselves and beat themselves up, but their parents did 10 times that, and they defend that parent. So that's going to set up a distortion of responsibility today. So you got to get that stuff straightened out where you're assigning responsibility but not blaming yourself or another person. And that's why shame reduction work is so important after people get some strength in recovery. And there's a lot, that's what our workshops do. We do a lot of shame reduction work and grief work and, you know, just educating people around the trauma and getting some of these wounds moved, people move through some of those wounds. So does that make sense how people will get stuck in the blame?
Oh, 100%. And I was just sitting here thinking, now, how can people find out about your shame reduction workshops and other workshops, too?
Well, enchantmentworkshops.com is our website. Right now we're working on integrating some equine. We have an equine therapist we like, and doing some stuff with the horses. We do customized intensives where we'll take an individual or a couple up here and, you know, it's just a therapist and that individual. And we only work with people who are really have done their own work or really trained in PIT, PIA's model, and who are CSATs, Certified Sex Addiction Therapists. So people can find out through the website, or they can call, you know, they can call our number. My number and my wife's number, Marby, that's on the website, or our email is on the website. And we, you know, the customized intensives, we do an 18-page questionnaire, and then we assess intricately and talk to, if they have a therapist, we do an over-the-phone interview, and we really assess what the needs are, and we design something specific for that individual or couple. And we've had some families up here too, so mothers and fathers and adult, you know, adult dads. It makes me think. I had a guy years ago, and most people who blame others, going back to that question, it's interesting because I've never had anybody answer this question other than this way. When I say, what is blaming another person, what is blaming your parents protecting you from? And I mean when they're stuck in that rage and that blame and they're not, and they all say pain. And, you know, usually that's where they drop into the tears. But,
Well, that it sounds like these customized intensives, this is something that I don't hear a lot of other therapists offering. I mean, this sounds like a very unique program that you've got to offer people, and it really is based on where they're at. Like you said, they have to do their own work first, but this sounds exciting. So can you share some of the concrete recovery tools that you can actually leave our audience with, but that you probably also use with your in your therapy and with these customized intensives?
Sure. We at the end of the workshop, one of the things we do a really comprehensive aftercare plan. And in doing the trauma work, we really utilize some of the wounded child exercises, and we have a whole we're going to put together a workbook, but we have a whole set of exercises where people who get stuck in trauma and regress into that wounded child, how they can really get out of that. But most for the listeners today, I mean, I think if you're in one of those relationships where you ping pong off of each other, so there's a lot of that fighting or going back and forth or making each other wrong and you know, just that tit for tat, we suggest you take a couple's journal and you spread the fight out over a couple of days if it's something that you're getting intense about, and you have to write back and forth so the other person has a day to answer. Of course, it's best to have a healthy therapist involved, but a couple's journal is a real powerful tool. And then again, the couple's meeting format, what that comes down to is taking joy, pain, fear, anger, shame, guilt, loneliness, sadness, what you're proud of, what you have excitement about, and you share that once a week. You create a sacred time, and you go through all those feelings, and it's not a time to have input into the other person's disclosure. It's a time to just listen. So we utilize that. And then reading is really valuable, taking a relationship book. Charles Whitfield wrote a book called Healthy Boundaries, and boundaries are not conceptualized by most people. I always tell people a window needs a screen to keep the bugs out. Well, we need to screen what we're listening to and, you know, accept what fits. And so couples late at night before they go to bed, let's just reading a little bit to each other is a powerful thing. Having your own sponsors, doing your own step work, going to your own meetings. And RCA is a program that suggests you get a couple's sponsor. So sometimes having a mentor that you both trust or a relationship where you know two people that, and it's got to be somebody pretty healthy. That way, when you get stuck, you can bounce things off of them and just accept what they have to give you in the way of feedback.
Yeah, you are so lucky because you have RCA groups out there. The Indianapolis area has no RCA, and I agree. I think all couples need mentor couples, you know, that they can bounce things off of, and, you know, it's when you can find some healthy couples, they have a lot to give.
Well,
so you shared some of the...
You're right.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you're very right. A last tool I want to share with you, which seems kind of silly, but I'll have couples who have plenty of money and you have a wife or even a husband in some cases where they're stuck at home with the kids and they don't have a life and they can't get to meetings and, you know, just getting somebody in to clean the house once a week for 50, 60 bucks, you know, and depending on what size house you have, you know, it's going to be $50 to $100, $150. But, boy, that brings a lot of relief because then that, and getting resources, you know, good rapport with grandparents. As the kids get older, when they're pre-verbal, it's really tough. But when you have kids involved, getting good sitters, it takes truly, you know, a whole tribe to raise children, you know. In our society, it's pretty tough. Moms are doing that, and it's a backbreaker where you've got several kids.
Yes,
go ahead.
Talking about creating some of the infrastructure that honors the other person by making it easier for him or her. And in this case, we're talking about the hers. But truly, that can be quite a recovery tool because it is so honoring.
It's honoring, and if both people can't take care of their own needs outside the relationship, they're going to have empty cups, and then they're going to try to plug into the other person to fill it, and two empty cups can't fill two empty cups. So you have to take responsibility for your own happiness, your own getting your own needs and wants met outside the relationship and inside. And sometimes they're tilted, they're trying to get it all from inside, and sometimes they're tilted and trying to get it all from outside. Love avoiders are famous for getting all their needs met outside the relationship, and love addicts are famous for trying to get all of it met from an empty cup inside the relationship.
Sure. Well, you know,
it's looking at the structure and the tools.
And Ben, you know, I really think all of the things you've shared with us tonight, again, could apply to any couple who's doing their work. What do you do when you're in the midst of some work and somebody has relapsed? Because that is so frequent in the lives of addicts. So what do you do then?
Well, it is frequent, but it's less frequent if they're committed to doing emotional work, because I find most of those relapses really are about the deeper unfinished business. So if they're really doing the emotional work and doing it together, you don't see that as much. Now, when you're working with people who haven't really got their roots in deep recovery, I mean, our protocol is very simple. If you're coming to us, you're going to meetings and you have a sponsor. If you're still acting out, you're not going to be with us long because we're going to recommend treatment.
Yeah,
so,
treatment centers.
Yeah, a treatment center. So, you know, workshops are not going to get that done. If you've got someone who's relapsing or chronically relapsing, you really have to go back to the beginning tasks, which are building support. You rework a first step with a sponsor, and if they're in my men's group, they present that there too. So it's, you know, more meetings, more sponsor contact, go back to treatment if it's a severe issue, you know, and then you've got to manage the spouse, because if they're a sex addict, what's going on there is another betrayal and another, depending on how they act it out. But you've got to really work with the spouse and the partner, because they'll lapse into their own COSA issues or Al-Anon issues. And so that's tough when people relapse, because it's very scary and painful.
Well, Ben Galloway, thank you so much for sharing about your enchantment workshops, your recovery tools that you use with couples. And for anybody who's listening, that's www.enchantmentworkshops.com. And they can get a hold of you, Ben, by again dialing 602-228-8737 and ask you questions, get some resources, and find out more about the model that you're using. So I really appreciate you sharing all this information. You can feel that you do great work with couples, and you know, you're right. People need to do their individual work, but clearly, you know, there's no better way to get healthy but to develop that healthy relationship with another person.
That's right. You're a delight, Carol. Thanks for having me on. You got a great thing going there.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon. I promise.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Have
it.
A great one.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. All right. So I highly advise you to listen to this show again, and you go to iTunes and put in Sex Help with Carol the Coach. It'll come up, Hope, Strength, and Recovery. And as I always say, there'll be only one of you at all times, so fearlessly be yourself. We'll see you next week. We got Joe Court, who's going to be talking about compulsion and men who are attracted to men, and what does that mean? We'll see you next week.